Somewhere men are laughing, and somewhere children shout, but there is no joy in Mudville. Mighty Casey has struck!
I only got one thing to say to you. Strike this mother out.
2-2. He got a perfect game. Edwin done by the King.
Hey, you! Are you right there, Apple?
Took away a game-tying home run for Manny Ramirez.
That's my thing, fellas.
We will see you tomorrow night.
Ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for visiting us this evening.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Mudville. I am one of your hosts, Nolan Rabine.
I am your other host, Brody Staub.
And today we are coming at you guys on Thursday, February 6th. The NBA trade deadline was this afternoon, and despite us being a baseball podcast, we got to join into the conversation that is dominating not just the sports world, but the entire country as a whole, and even the world, given some of the players who were moved this week. The unbelievable blockbuster trade that broke on Saturday night going into Sunday from Shams Charania, the NBA's leading breaking news reporter, sort of one of one now that Woj is at St. Bonaventure. Same guy who broke the news that Donald Trump had COVID back in 2020. Comes back.
Wait, Shams did that?
Yeah, you don't remember that?
How was he plugged into that market?
I have no idea. I don't know how he got that scoop, but he was the one who got it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good for Shams. That's a big get.
Shams with an even bigger, dare I say, scoop this week as he breaks the unbelievable news that NBA superstar, one of the best players in the entire world, Luka Doncic, was traded from the Dallas Mavericks to the Los Angeles Lakers in a deal that also included Maxi Kleber and Markieff Morris going to LA for...
Did you just have a stroke?
What, when saying Maxi Kleber?
No, both of them. It's just, I know his name is Markieff Morris, but it just sounds wrong every time I hear it.
Fair enough.
The F really throws you off.
For Anthony Davis, Max Christie, and a first-round pick in 2029 going back to the Mavericks.
Ridiculous.
Wow. Now, this was reported by Shams Saturday night around 12 o'clock, and I did not go to sleep until 3 a.m. that night. And I know that I am not alone, because the magnitude of this trade and the impact that it's going to have on Dallas sports in particular for decades to come cannot be overstated. When this news broke, everybody assumed that it was fake. Like, I saw so many posts right after it came out, like, oh, that's not
like,
real.
No way.
Like,
yeah.
That can't be real. Shams had to have been hacked. I was kind of personally like, hey, that's a little bit impressive that whoever hacked Shams' account, like, didn't immediately just blow their load by posting, like, I'm gay or buy shitcoin or whatever those people usually tweet whenever they're like, oh my God, I guessed somebody's
Sham
password.
Coin.
Yeah. And instead put in the extra work to break a fake trade.
Come up with a stupid trade that's funny enough to be believable.
Yeah.
But like so ridiculous that it would get clicks.
Format it correctly and even include the Utah Jazz getting Jalen Hood-Schifino.
That's a third team.
It's like, that's a really nice touch, man. Well done. Yeah. Like, whoever did that, props to you. But every single person who saw that just assumed it was not real because.
Yep.
I think it was just assumed around organizations, GMs, fans, players, everybody who follows basketball and knows anything about the sport just had a natural assumption that Luka Doncic was in the tier of players who are absolutely untouchable under any circumstances, like Nikola Jokic, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Victor Wembanyama, Luka Doncic. Like, that is probably
Jaylen
the
Brunson.
Tier. Maybe like Jason Tatum, but...
And Josh Hart.
And like, just the fact that this was such a universal reaction that no one thought that there was any chance that what they were seeing was real. It just goes to show how truly unprecedented this deal was. What a baffling decision it was for the Dallas Mavericks to even consider trading this player away. And how equally baffling it was that they went about this process in the way that they did. So I have a lot to say about this deal. I mean, there are so many different aspects that we have to break down of this. I'd like to, a little bit at the end, try to sort of explain this deal in MLB terms, as they say.
I think it would be fun to try to come up with like either a hypothetical comp or like the closest thing that you can think of, because there really isn't one, but we'll get into it. Like when this came out, I was visiting a friend in Boston and we were still awake. We actually had just watched The Apprentice, so stay tuned on a possible podcast episode about that movie.
I'd love to do that, yeah.
One of his roommates was just like, wait, is this, like you just said, Anthony Davis to the Mavs, and we were like, what are you talking about? And then somebody else goes, no, that was fake, I saw that. And then I was like, oh, okay. And then somebody else goes, oh, it's real. Like, immediately everyone freaked out. We threw on ESPN and they gathered up Stephen A. Smith and Brian Windhorst like the Avengers. They had them like somehow rubbing the crust out of their eyes because it was like 12:45, and they're like, I don't really understand how this is. Like, Stephen A. didn't actually go on camera, which I thought was really funny. They had Windhorst, like, sitting there, clearly exhausted. Like, now he has to get out there and talk about this. Because it broke in the middle of the night, which was crazy. It's like a heist. The thing that we kept on saying over and over again was, like, this feels like it's either we're wrong about the way that people view Anthony Davis in the NBA, which I don't think that that's completely far-fetched. It's ridiculous that, like, you know, everybody is aware that this is a bad deal. But when you're involved in the sport, I think athletes are seen a lot different. It's why, like, everybody, like, in the MLB has a ton of respect for, like, Giancarlo Stanton, for instance. Like, it's like, when you're around for that long or whatever, like, when you've done things that are impressive, like, the other athletes always have somebody's back. Maybe within the NBA, Anthony Davis is seen as more valuable than the regular fan understands him to be, or maybe there's an issue with Luka that, you know, we didn't really know about, that we kind of have pieced together over the week, that it's like, oh, well, they think he's out of shape, they don't want to give him the max, they don't want to commit, like all these things. And also, apparently, it's both, because the Mavericks do think that Anthony Davis is a piece that they're going to use to compete for a championship now. And also, Luka Doncic is overweight and out of shape, and they're afraid of giving him a ton of money. You know, he's Zion, but better. It's weird. This has been a really weird few days for NBA conversation, and also a weird wrinkle that, you know, I think you kind of have to throw in before the Super Bowl, when it's the weekend of no sports except for the NBA. This happens, and all of a sudden, everybody's talking about basketball. So it's like people are like throwing together conspiracy theories. It's just been a whirlwind. Been very fun.
I don't even think that Anthony Davis is being improperly valued by like anybody in this deal. Like even like around the league, I think everybody knows exactly who Anthony Davis is. Like when he's on the floor, when he's healthy, like he is one of the most dominant players in defensive history for sure. But he's also an incredible player on offense as well. Like he's developed his jump shot over the course of his career. That just really turned him into a player who can sort of like do it all. We know he has injury risks. We know that he has durability concerns. And he's 31 years old, which when you're in the NBA, it does raise a few questions about how long you're going to be able to perform at this elite level. Really, the shocking part of this trade is the fact that 29 franchises in the NBA would jump at the opportunity to trade like every asset they have for Luka Doncic.
Right.
Maybe not 29, maybe 26. But the one team who had him and who has had him for the past 7 years since he was drafted in 2018, who have watched him be an all-NBA player for the past 5 years, finished like somewhere between fourth and eighth in MVP voting every year between 2020 and last year, and who watched him go to the NBA Finals last year and take on a Celtics super team that he wasn't able to beat. But like the fact they even got there in such a loaded conference, I mean, it's all that you need to know about what a singular athlete this is. And they treated him like he was Alek Manoah. And that is the truly shocking part of this deal, is it's like, we have never seen a franchise undervalue and go out of their way to try to move off of a generational superstar who is one of the 3 to 5 best players in the league, is under contract for like multiple years, had no doubts about wanting to sign his Supermax extension this offseason, and is only 25 years old. Like, that is not a situation we have ever seen before. I don't think it's a situation we will ever see again. And that's why there is just so much to discuss when it comes to this deal. the more details that have come out about this process in the days since it happened, many of which are coming directly from the Mavericks GM, Nico Harrison himself, like are truly shocking. Once it had been sort of accepted around the world that this was actually a real trade and that Shams hadn't been hacked, questions started to be asked, like, was Nico Harrison forced into making this trade? Were his hands tied? And I think a lot of people just naturally assumed that was the case, because it's the only way that trading Luka Doncic could ever make sense. You know, people were asking, did Luka request a trade? Did he force his way out? Had he been trying to make this happen for a long time? That was not the case at all. Luka very explicitly said, no, I did not request a trade out of Dallas. I had no concerns about signing the Supermax extension that I would have been eligible for this offseason. And, you know, if they had concrete knowledge that he was going to leave and sign directly with the LA Lakers at some point, if that was just a very open secret around the league to the point where the value that the Mavericks could place on Luka Doncic was capped, and every other team knew, if we trade for this guy, we'll only have him for like 1 to 2 years, because once he hits free agency, he's going to go sign with the LA Lakers, that would have been a different story. But that's not the case at all. That's just one of the most unbelievable parts of this, is that there were so many other ways that they could have gone about doing this. They could have gone about this process even if they inexplicably wanted to get rid of this player. The fact that he was committed to this team, to the city of Dallas, the fact that he had every intention of signing that contract this offseason, that he was in it for the long haul, you know, despite a lot of dysfunction in that organization and a lot of mistakes that were made and only able to be corrected because of very singular circumstances, the only word to describe it is betrayal, like betrayal of a player who was completely blindsided by this trade, betrayal of a city and a fan base who have been in mourning for the past week and will never get over this for generations. It's really just truly shocking. Like, the Mavericks have fucked up so many times in the past years. They were only able to get Kyrie Irving because of a bunch of external circumstances that went into his own availability, but they were able to pair Kyrie with Luka, create one of the most dominant rosters in the league, put together a team that is a contender in a very loaded Western Conference. They still have one of the best rosters in the league with Anthony Davis. Like, this is a team still that can go out there and still find success in the playoffs. But there's levels to that, especially from a team building perspective and looking more than like 6 months into the future. They had a top five player in the NBA at age 25 who was willing to play for them for the rest of his career, at least the rest of his prime. Like I said, it's a guy that 29 franchises in the NBA would jump at the opportunity to be able to pay him super max money and have him be the anchor of their offense for years and years to come, because he is such a special talent that any...
And the face of their franchise, by
the
way.
Yeah, the face of their franchise... Like, the most beloved athlete in the city.
Last year.
Right, directly off of a finals appearance. Like, any team built around him is going to result in one of the best offenses in the league, as long as you don't, like, somehow assemble the worst supporting cast of all time. As it turns out, the only team that would ever be willing to move on from Luka Doncic at this point in his career is the team that had been rostering him for almost 7 years. Like, it was the rightful assumption of anybody who follows the NBA, cares about basketball at all, that he was among the very last players that any GM would ever even consider trading. Like, there are not many names you put above him, if any, in terms of guys that if another team calls you about that player, you say no and you hang up. Like I said,
I mean, I think SGA is like probably the one that's the quickest no, aside from Luka, you'd think. But also, did you hear that they didn't call anyone else?
I did. That's what's so unbelievable about it. It's like they could have gone about this in so many different ways.
The Knicks gave up like 5 first round picks to get Karl Anthony Towns. Imagine how many first rounders.
No. That was for Mikal Bridges. That wasn't even for Kat.
I'm sorry. You're right.
That was for Mikal Bridges, who, like, that's a good player.
Yeah,
who's Luka Doncic compared to Mikal Bridges?
I mean, Mikal Bridges is a role player compared to Luka. Like, I mean, that's like, imagine what you could get in that haul. Like, that is look, I'm not going to pretend that I fully, you know, would be able to predict an NBA trade package like value, because that's not my strong suit as a sports fan, as I've learned. There is certainly precedent that has been set that when there's a player of this caliber or better, I mean, you'd have to be a complete chump to walk away dealing this guy or a guy of like this for one first rounder in 4 years and an aged veteran. That's crazy. Again, I go back to what I was saying earlier about our misunderstanding of the value or the internal valuation of Anthony Davis, because it's the only thing that makes sense aside from like foul play. It's strange. It's dumb, but it really is just like odd. Like the first thing that once you realize it was real is not like, whoa, like blockbuster. It's like, what the just happened? This doesn't happen at all, like ever, which is why I think it is fun to try to come up with a comp and like who you got. Like, I seriously, as far as like baseball goes, is this the Yankees trading Aaron Judge? Like, are we,
I think it's worse.
Say that? I don't know. I don't think it's fair to say it's like the Dodgers trading Shohei.
I think it's the Red Sox trading Mookie Betts, if anything.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a good one.
But
that is a good one. But even then, they said that they were doing it because they're scrapping payroll. This is a move to compete for the Mavs. That's what they see this as. That's why they didn't get the draft picks. That's why they didn't restock. That's why they took a veteran.
Yeah, I mean, there are also, like, no tax incentives to this. Even then, they're going to be paying Anthony Davis more than they would have been paying Luka in, like, yep, 3 years, when
Luka
will be 28 and Anthony Davis will be 35. Like, I do think it has, yep, a little bit to do with money, because it is going to save the owner some money on, like, taxes and get them under a certain threshold. Like, there are a bunch of really,
avoiding
like, specific
the supermax.
Levels.
It's like $350 yeah. million dollars or whatever it was that Luka could get.
It screws Luka out of a lot of money, because he's no longer
eligible
to sign that.
I think it's like $120 million.
Supermax. Yeah,
that he now
like that.
Is blocked from, which is crazy.
Like, that tier of player, like you said, Shea's absolutely in that tier. I think it goes...
Association's probably going to be pissed about this, by the way.
I think so. But I think
it's going to be interesting to see how they react.
Jokic is number one, Giannis, yep, and then Luka, and then Shea, Victor Wembanyama.
Giannis,
that is,
has
that
hinted
tier
about wanting to leave Milwaukee, to the point that it's almost like if you could get a good deal,
maybe Jason Tatum, maybe Anthony Edwards. The point remains that to even get to the point where you're talking about how you would go about moving a player like him is very, very difficult. Like, there is an inherent resistance on the part of, I think, any sports fan to even consider, yep, discussing that. But if you're going to do so, how do you not, as an NBA organization, test the fucking market? How do you not, yeah, leak it out to Shams, leak it out to whoever? Say,
right, we're thinking about
Luka Doncic is available. Because
our phones are open.
Even that announcement is going to send shockwaves throughout the league. You, yep, are going to get 29 phone calls within 5 minutes. Like, I understand that they wanted to remain competitive for this season, as they should have, because they clearly think it's their best shot to win a title. The immediate flaw in that is that you can't trade Luka Doncic for anyone and have a better chance to win this year than you already did.
Do you think they could have traded Kyrie for Anthony Davis straight up?
No, I don't think so. That would surprise me.
You have to include some other stuff. But I'm saying that's the choice they made. They said we're better off contending with Kyrie and Anthony Davis than we are having Luka and Kyrie together. Which, like, people argued right afterwards that, yeah, okay, Luka and Kyrie are both, like, ball-dominant point guards that need the ball to be effective. Which, like, sure, but they made the finals last year. That,
yeah, clearly
really
they are
problem.
Effective.
Like, also, Anthony Davis said he wants to play the four instead of be a center because he doesn't like want to be underneath as much or something. Like, there's a lot of reasons that came out immediately after that are a little like, yeah, okay, sure. But also, you just traded away Luka Doncic, whereas this doesn't make any sense.
Dallas had every reason to trade for Anthony Davis. Like, that is absolutely a player that team should want to go out and get under almost any circumstances, because they are one, right, of the few teams that actually could play him at the four, because they have Derek Lively, who's currently hurt right now, because they have Daniel Gafford. They can go out and put Anthony Davis in the role that he wants to be in, but you miss the forest for the trees when you trade Luka Doncic under any circumstances. Like, they traded the forest for a really big tree.
He's a tall tree.
Like, he is your competitive window. Like, the Mavericks shortened their window so hard by doing this trade. And, like, you know, if you're doing
6 years. Luka's 25, Anthony Davis is 31. And also, Anthony Davis doesn't play.
maybe if you trade him for AD and LeBron and Dalton Connect and 3 first-round picks, but even that, I'd say, is not worth it. Other teams would have jumped at the opportunity to offer way more value than they got from the Lakers. Like, they could have called Houston.
That's the thing I'm never going to get over.
And yeah. I bet Raphael Stone offers Jabari Smith Jr., Fred VanVleet, Reed Shepard, and 3 first-round picks. Or Orlando offers Franz Wagner, Anthony Black, Goga, and a shit ton of firsts. Maybe Presti says, nah, I'm good, regardless, with the team that he's built in Oklahoma City. But you could get like 7 first-round picks from the Thunder with the amount of draft capital that they have accumulated. Yep. Plus, you get Nikola Topic, who's not going to have a spot on that team next year, even when he's healthy. Usman Jang, AJ Mitchell. Like, that's nowhere near enough for Luka Doncic, but nothing is enough for Luka Doncic. That's the whole point of this. Like, the fact that they didn't even essentially put him up for auction, knowing that they wanted to move off of this player, is one of the most inept decisions I have ever seen a team make. Perhaps only surpassed by the decision to move Luka in the first place. Like, this is what happens when you give a small child the keys to an NBA franchise. And I feel so bad for any fan of the Dallas Mavericks. And, like, I'm an Oklahoma City fan. Like, that has been one of the very biggest rivalries in the NBA over the past 18 months. Every Thunder-Mavs matchup was, like, must-see TV, even in the playoffs last year. Like, PJ Washington in that series went absolutely insane. That pissed me off so badly. Like, I should be preying on that team's downfall, smoking the Mavs pack right now, and I'm not. I just feel awful for their fans because, like, I have been there, and I know what it feels like to have the rug pulled out from under you and lose a superstar player just like that. Like,
yeah, I keep telling you not to invest in all those cryptos, dude. Way too familiar with the rug pull.
I shouldn't have bought Hawk to a coin. That was my biggest mistake.
Has she been seen yet since that?
Like, no, I think she might be dead.
I think she got disappeared, like, professionally.
I think they threw Hawk Tua out of an airplane.
Her 15 minutes,
like they did
ended,
to
and they're like,
communists,
all right, no more
in
of
the
this.
1970s. Kevin Durant signing with the Golden State Warriors is one of the lowest moments of my life. But
by the way, him saying, where's the loyalty, is so funny.
So funny. Like, so funny.
All right, pot, kettle. Like, nice to meet you.
Even that was like a huge hyped up decision with years of discourse that surrounded it before it happened. Right. So like,
as
I
all
knew,
of these are when this happens, because that's what it requires to make a move of that kind of magnitude.
Like, I knew that some decision from him was coming. I knew something was going to happen. I just hoped it was going to be the decision that made me personally happy. This was a player that the Mavericks had for years to come. He was their guy, almost certainly the best player they'll ever see in a Dallas Mavericks uniform again, who was committed to being a part of that franchise and to playing in that city for the foreseeable future, and he gets taken from them out of absolutely nowhere overnight. I can't imagine what that must be like.
I mean, this is not a feeling that I'm familiar with. I'm trying to even think, like, the closest is when Odell got traded. I was upset about that, but, like, there were some hints, you know, that something was coming at the time, like, a week in advance. Like, the owner of the Giants was like, he should talk less and play more. And then I remember being like, oh, man, can you stop talking about our best player like that, please? And then they traded him. That was tough, but at the same time, also, it's football, and he's one of 22 guys. It's not as impactful at all to have one superstar on a football team. Like, yeah, Odell Beckham was a massive part of the New York Giants, and it hurt to watch a superstar you've watched over the last couple of years grow into, you know, this amazing talent leave, like, forcefully. It's not by choice. It's like, we're getting rid of you. So, yeah, that is not fun. I mean, basketball specifically, too. Another reason why these trades just don't happen. Individuals are so valuable in the NBA that when you have somebody this talented, it's like people go to insane lengths to hold on to them. That's why Supermaxes exist, so that you could negotiate with players that you have who you might otherwise lose to free agency because they want to play in a bigger market or something. It's what MLB owners who like to cry poor wish that they could have, that all of a sudden, you know, it's capped what other teams can offer them and you can offer your homegrown guys more money. If that was in the MLB, you would see it all the time and people would love it because that's, you know, or small market teams, you know, would love it. it's so rare that you see somebody of this talent, of a team that's this caliber, leave in general, and is absolutely batshit insane that it was not their own choice to leave in free agency. They were kicked out the door. I think we can only say it so many times before we start beating a dead horse, if we have not already. It's hard to wrap your mind around this. This does not happen in sports, and it is a good reason that everybody has been talking about it nonstop for a week. It's just, it's one of those seismic events that I feel like you're going to be asked where you were when it happened and, you know, how you thought about it at the time or whatever. And the only way this doesn't end up looking absolutely terrible is if the Mavs go out and win the finals and win a championship this season now with this new core. I have my doubts that it will happen because the West is really strong and it'll be really hard to get out of there. So, I don't know. It is premature to say how terrible this is in general. I think it's very, like, all you can do is say how shocking it is. So we have to wait, I guess, to see if they do win a championship. I don't think it's going to happen. Either way, it's fun to talk about.
Yeah, it's difficult not to beat the dead horse because the Dallas Mavericks are the dead horse.
At this point, they are the dead horse, man.
I don't know. I kind of want to like talk about the impact on both of these rosters that's going to be had by this trade. Like, this is a complete reset for the Lakers long term. They go from having a core of LeBron, 40-year-old LeBron, that is, 31-year-old Anthony Davis, Austin Reeves, and a pretty questionable supporting cast, to having LeBron, Reeves, and Luka Doncic. And there's a lot more work for Rob Pelinka to do. I mean, we saw a little bit more of that work last night when they traded Dalton Knecht and a few pieces for Mark Williams, that new center from the Charlotte Hornets, who I think is going to play very well in that system with LeBron and Luka, another guy who's barely healthy ever, but I mean, that's another conversation. Having Luka Doncic for years to come gives them a base to build around that was a lot murkier a week ago than it is now. Like, it was very possible that if this last iteration of the LA Lakers roster fell apart, basically meaning Anthony Davis gets hurt again, suffers a long-term injury, that they would be on the verge of having to enter a pretty long rebuild, which would probably consist of trading LeBron and going after a bunch of draft picks and probably having to hope to luck out in the draft lottery in 2026 and maybe even 2028 to try to rebuild a core that could actually contend. They don't have their first this year or in 2027, so like they would have had to have gotten a little creative there. But in that scenario, I mean, Anthony Davis probably still gets traded, but the return looks a lot different. And this trade wipes that possibility off the table completely. Because now you have LeBron and Luka, and even if you do end up saying, hey, we're not going to compete this year, I mean, trade deadline's over now, so you can't do that now. But like, even if you end up moving off of LeBron and focusing on the future of your organization, that future just became a whole lot clearer and a whole lot brighter. You have that young superstar now who, like I said, unless you assemble the worst supporting cast of all time, should have you within contention whenever he's healthy and on the floor. And they're the Los Angeles Lakers, so they should have no problem being able to get other free agents on board, being able to make trades with other franchises. It's very easy for the Los Angeles Lakers to be all in. And having Luka Doncic means that they're going to be all in for years to come. It extends their window indefinitely. Like, the blessing and rejuvenation that the Dallas Mavericks provided the LA Lakers with cannot be overstated. This could not have gone any better for them in their wildest dreams, and they get the easiest A-plus trade grade ever, I think.
They also just get to now maneuver right into their next superstars, like right when LeBron leaves. I mean, it's just, it's unfair. This has gone about as good as anything possibly could have gone for a franchise that things constantly go very well for. So it's like a little frustrating.
They go from almost 20 years of having Kobe Bryant to a couple years without a superstar. Then they bring in LeBron James. And now that LeBron is approaching 40, which for him doesn't even mean he's approaching retirement age. He could keep doing this for like years to come because he is the greatest athlete to ever touch the game of basketball. Now you go and you have Luka Doncic, and that's the future of their team. like, it's just unbelievable. And if I was somebody who cared a little bit more about the Lakers and I had a level of hatred for them that a lot of fans around the league do, I would be sick to my stomach over this. And so many people are so upset because Pelinka basically got to, like, answer the phone and have a guy say to him, hey, do you want Luka Doncic? And that doesn't happen to anybody. So, like, of course it happens to the fucking Lakers, right?
For a bag of peanut.
And
ridiculous.
The Dallas Mavericks acquire a top 10, 15 player probably in the league in Anthony Davis, one of the best defenders in NBA history, plus a solid role player in Max Christie, and a first round pick that isn't until 2029. So it's 4 years away.
There's a 13-year-old that has no idea they just got traded to the Dallas Mavericks.
And they still get an F because they traded Luka Doncic. Like, yep. The quote Nico Harrison gave was, I believe that defense wins championships. And while it's absolutely true that Anthony Davis is an elite defender and Luka Doncic is a bit of a traffic cone on defense, the negative impacts this swap has elsewhere is completely crippling to the long-term outlook of the organization. To even put aside the devastation that this trade has caused their fan base, their season ticket holders, and even the revenue that they're losing from people canceling en masse, giving up on the organization entirely, which is not something that you want to put aside to begin with. Like, other teams are elite on defense as well. Like I said, their main rivals over the past 18 months have been the Oklahoma City Thunder, who have some of the best defensive play on the perimeters the league has ever seen. They're going to get Chet Holmgren back tomorrow. It'll be tonight by the time that this episode comes out. He's going to play a game for the first time in like 3 months, I believe, on Friday. And this trade completely alters the way that those teams match up, because it now means that Kyrie Irving is getting almost all of the Cason Wallace, Alex Caruso, Lu Dort experience that even flummoxed Luka most of the time that they matched up in the first place. Like, maybe Lu Dort goes to guard PJ Washington, who has been a thorn in OKC's side, especially during last year's playoff series. But that will not be the case if he's being guarded by Lu Dort. And having Anthony Davis to pair with Daniel Gafford when healthy Derek Lively, that gives Dallas a big advantage in the front court. But I think in a much greater sense, I don't think it gives them enough of an advantage now to even come close to justifying the impact that this trade is going to have on this franchise. Because Luka was the franchise. They had an indefinite contention window because of Luka. So acquiring Anthony Davis is huge to build that contender, but the contender existed because of the singular talent that they gave up in this trade to make it happen. So while they should still be 100% considered contenders for 2025, their window gets so much shorter. Finding players to add onto this roster is going to get a lot harder. And I don't even think that they got better for this playoff run. Like, it's not going to help the way that they match up against the best teams in the West. They'll probably really struggle on offense against a team like the Rockets, OKC, Memphis Grizzlies. And those are the teams that they're going to have to go through if they want to go back to the finals, where Luka took them last year, not even a year ago. They have alienated their fan base beyond repair. Fans are in the middle of a mass exodus from the franchise. And I'm not sure that even winning the NBA Finals this year would get those people back. Like, it is the easiest F I could ever imagine on a trade. The fact that they wanted this and even proposed the idea to the Lakers is so absurd that I can barely wrap my head around it. Like, I can't imagine Rob Pelinka's reaction when he picked up the phone and another team offered him Luka Doncic. Apparently they waited 2 days after receiving the offer, and they checked with the whole organization to see if they wanted this and to get the confirmation that they wanted to make it happen. Those must have been the longest 2 days of Rob Pelinka's life. He must have been saying to himself, please don't back out of this. Please actually be serious about making this move. And when it was finally announced and they agreed to it and the trade went through, the sigh of pure ecstasy that he must have let out is the kind of thing executives all around sports dream of achieving once in a career. And on the other end, Nico Harrison, like, I could say he's going to go down as this or that, but it's already happened. He's already the most hated man in Dallas since Lee Harvey Oswald. He will forever be the man who traded Luka Doncic. before this week, I didn't think there was a trade that even winning an NBA championship would not retroactively justify, no matter how lopsided or how much the team gave up. This might be that trade. We'll see how people feel come June. If this version of the Dallas Mavericks roster wins a title with Kyrie, AD, Derek Lively, Daniel Gafford, PJ Washington, and you ask fans, would you trade this championship to undo the Luka Doncic trade? I honestly think they say yes. Because the amount of hatred in that team's direction this week, the number of people eviscerating Mark Cuban, who isn't even in control of the franchise anymore, is astounding.
The Mark Cuban part of it is funny. Like, there was a thing that came out about somebody asking him, like, or being like, I'm so shocked this happened or whatever. And he was like, yeah, me too. He has no control over it. But I keep on saying it. It's rare that this level of player leaves a franchise at all. And for it to not be a choice. This isn't Juan Soto choosing the Mets over the Yankees. This is the Yankees trading away Juan Soto at the trade deadline. Just because they were like, well, we could do better. It doesn't happen.
Give me Jacob DeGrom. Pitching wins championships. That does kind of bring me to the next point, because we talk about shitty MLB owners all the time, and it's a very different situation than the NBA because there's no salary cap or salary floor, and it's much easier in baseball to say, we're not going to compete for an entire decade, we'll have the lowest payroll in the league, and I, the owner, will personally pocket tens of millions of dollars. It's different in the NBA if you want to be a cheap owner. You have to do it through tax evasion and making deals like this that prevent you from having to commit as much money to one player as you could to another player. But the new owners of the Mavericks, led by Miriam Adelson, one of the most evil people on this planet, have taken that to a new extreme. Like, I hate a lot of MLB owners. I think they are leeches on the game. In some cases, they are truly despicable people. And yet none of them are nearly as bad as Miriam Adelson. This is a lady who gave over $150 million to elect Donald Trump, is one of the primary global advocates to ethnically cleanse Gaza and put a fucking casino in the West Bank. She and her dead bitch of a husband, Sheldon Adelson, have dedicated their entire lives to throwing billions of dollars at some of the most shamefully despicable acts of injustice the world has ever seen. And where does the faucet turn off for her? Like, where can she suddenly not commit to writing a check from her several bank accounts made up fully of Monopoly money? Here. It's keeping the fan favorite 25-year-old superstar player in town for the rest of his career. Like, she will happily send Luka Doncic to LA and break the hearts of her team's entire fan base, some of whom have left the team entirely and are never coming back because of this, all to save money on taxes and avoid paying this Supermax deal.
Well, like, that's the thing with all this new, you know, these new generation of owners anyway. None of it is about, you know, the actual sport, the players, the fans, whatever. I mean, it's a business. Like, they run it as a business. So your options are either to have the 25-year-old who's going to cost you $350 million in over 5 years, or you could trade for this other, you know, older veteran, whatever, just this other asset, because it's business, it's not players, who's going to cost you less. And you could, if you're going to be pushed, you could make an argument that you could still compete with them.
Like, they're going to be paying
old
Anthony
business
Davis
lady
more
says, do that one
at age 35. I'm not sure how well this even works. If you want to talk about her saving money.
Are they giving him over $350 million or something?
No, I think I'm just talking about him over the next like 3 years or so of this contract. I'm not sure how committing a Supermax contract to Luka would have affected that. I think maybe in that case he might have been making more. I'm not entirely sure about that, so I won't try to make a statement
it
on
must
it.
Be.
But it's just one unfathomable decision after another, and I'll never stop being completely stunned by it. If I was a Dallas Mavericks fan, I don't know what I would be doing or where I would be.
3 years
right now.
For 175 from 2023. So this year he's getting $43 million, next year 54, year after that 58, year after that 62.
Okay.
That's a lot of money.
I just cannot imagine this level of betrayal shown to a player and to a fan base by the people who are in charge of making that franchise thrive. And the thing that I've been saying for a while that I think a lot of people are going to disagree with, that it's totally okay for you as a fan to switch fandoms when you find out that your team's owner sucks. I think that has been completely vindicated by this, because why would you ever root for a team owned by Miriam Adelson after this? I mean, why would you do it before is a different question, but especially yeah, but now that we've seen what this ownership group is willing to do to their own franchise. Like, I usually say that about cheap baseball owners like Bob Nutting or John Fisher. It was my main justification for kicking the New York Jets to the curb because of Woody Johnson and his dumbass Nepo baby son, Brick, who wouldn't allow them to get Jerry Jeudy because of a fucking Madden rating.
Brick Johnson.
Like, that is Brick Johnson, the most phallic-sounding name in the country, only after his father. He named his son after a penis so people would stop comparing his own name to a penis. He is the worst owner and the worst father potentially on planet Earth. And investing yourself financially and emotionally into a team owned by this person is an act of self-mutilation. And I'm never going to give anyone any shit if they recognize that and they make the tough decision to say, I'm not going to support this anymore.
The level that people should hate some owners right now in sports. I mean, so I recently heard a very fun story about Pittsburgh Pirates owner Bob Nutting, who, if you don't know, Bob Nutting is like the 10th richest owner in the MLB, and he regularly puts out a payroll that's in like the bottom five, which means he's just profiting more than his compatriots at a percentage level. When he was in Pittsburgh, he owned a ski mountain called Seven Springs Resort, or Seven Springs Mountain, and he used to go ski there, and people knew that he would be there. And this is already, he owned the Pirates. You know, people were well aware of how awful he was. And he would go ski, and people figured out what kind of outfits he would wear to ski. And when they saw him on the mountain, they would pelt him with snowballs, to the point that he eventually sold the mountain, which is so funny. He got bullied off of the mountain that he owns for being such a piece of crap. And I love a good grassroots movement trying to oust some like shithead multimillionaire from owning a mountain and ruining it. But I can just imagine a bunch of yinzers just pelting Bob Nutting with snowballs to the point that he sells one of his giant assets in a ski mountain in the middle of Western Pennsylvania. I love that so much. And that endeared me to Pirates fans more than I think I've ever felt for them. But good on you guys for kicking him off of his mountain.
You got to kick him off the mountain. Yeah. He's going to frack the
kick
mountain.
He's going to frack the mountain. We were talking about Sonny before this. Going to frack the mountain. That's, I think every bad owner in sports deserves to be pelted with snowballs until they eventually sell. I think that's a good way to go about this from now on. It's a shame there's no snow in Dallas, though.
Unless it's Mark Adonasio, then you can pelt him with sand.
There you go. Go pound sand, dude.
Do you know that story about Mark Adonasio stealing sand?
I do not.
Oh, brother. Please enlighten me. Okay, this is a bit of a story for another day, but basically he has caught multiple times over the course of like decades stealing the sand from his neighbor's property and like bringing it to his own so that he could have more sand. He's the sand bandit. He's the owner of the Milwaukee Brewers.
Why does he need more sand?
Why don't you need more sand, dude?
It's a great point. I could probably go for some sand.
We should be acquiring sand. Everybody else is going after crypto. Give me the sand. I'm going to corner the sand market. I'm going to sell it all to the owner of the Milwaukee Brewers.
The Sanders. The Milwaukee Sanders.
I've been trying to think of what the equivalent of this deal would look like in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, do you have names? I'm racking. I'm trying to think.
I've got a few. Like, okay, to get the obvious out of the way, given the differences in league economics, there's never going to be a direct one-to-one parallel.
Sure.
But the Mavs ownership doing this for tax reasons is ideologically, I think, pretty in line with a lot of baseball trades that we've seen in years past, when an owner just didn't want to pay a player, despite how good that player is. I think of number one, Mookie Betts to the Dodgers, I think is the clear example. But given the NBA salary cap, salary floor, and Major League Baseball owners' ability to exploit the lack of that situation in their own league, it is a little bit of like apples to oranges.
The Red Sox didn't get anything on Anthony Davis's level in return, too.
No, exactly. That was just a pure salary dump.
Exactly.
The best player
maybe in the league at the time, who had just won them a championship the previous year as part of one of the best rosters I've ever seen assembled. That 2018 yep. Sox team was disgusting. Like, there are superstar players in baseball that are around Luka Doncic's age with external factors of their own that could make a team somewhat hesitant to commit long-term, whether those reasons are justified or not. And there are players around Anthony Davis's age with health and longevity concerns that serve different purposes and play different roles on title contenders. So I think it can be comparable in some ways. And I think the closest player to Luka in MLB, in my mind, is probably Fernando Tatis Jr. because they're very similar in age. Tatis is 26, Luka's 25. I guess you could say that the conditioning and weight concerns that the Mavericks
had. How about
Vlad? Vlad is another great one. I think you can kind of say that some of the concerns that the Mavs had about Luka could be somewhat similar to, like, Fernando Tatis's off-the-field baggage, which, yeah. I mean, cost him the entire 2022 season. I think he's gotten better since then, so I'm not sure it's really even.
The ringworm? It went away?
I do think his ringworm has gotten better. Like, when he tested positive for PEDs and he got into a motorcycle accident, the Padres owner, Peter Seidler, passing away.
Right. Like, that's another aspect of it, is the ownership malfeasance.
Yeah, like, happening. He actually put his money where his mouth is by signing players to long and expensive deals, even in the case where it just was a contract that obviously wasn't going to age well, like Xander Bogaerts.
They've got Xander
Bogaerts'
grandchildren under contract.
They sure do. Like, they actually just voted Peter Seidler's brother the new owner this week. And the team is looking to cut payroll significantly. Like, there's a chance they deal Michael King before he hits free agency. Like, they're not going to do that by moving Fernando Tatis, who they have on contract for the next, like, 10 years already. I think that the shockwaves around the league that would cause if they did do that would not quite be as unprecedented as this trade was, but I think maybe it's about as close as you can get. Like, I, like you said, Vlad is a very good option. Ronald Acuna is a very good option. You kind of have health concerns there.
Yeah, but I was going to say, that's not even close. Acuna is, like, he's getting to the point where it's like, yeah, but he's just got to. He's closer to Anthony Davis than he is Luka Doncic.
Maybe. I was going to say, for an AD comparison, especially for the purposes of this trade, I think maybe I'd go with Zach Wheeler. One of the most talented players at his position, a huge boost for any contender, immediately makes a very good team a World Series favorite, has a history of success in the postseason, even though Anthony Davis got that ring in 2020 in the bubble, and the Phillies haven't quite gotten that during Zach Wheeler's tenure. Zach Wheeler doesn't have any rings. But by all accounts, he's one of the most valuable assets that a team could hope to have. And yet, there's a very firm understanding that you do not trade one of the very best position players in the league at age 25 for Zach Wheeler. You don't trade Bobby Witt or Juan Soto or Vladdy or Tatis or Acuna for Zach Wheeler. Like, I do think that maybe the closest comparison that I can think of is if San Diego said, "We believe pitching wins championships," and traded Fernando Tatis for Zach Wheeler and, like, Johan Rojas because they wanted outfield defense. Like, you can't trade picks in Major League Baseball. So, again, not a one-to-one.
I do think Vlad is a better comp just because it's a guy on a team or coming from a team that claims they want to compete. Part of it is because they don't want to pay him his big free agent contract that would be looming. I think there's, like, a few more things that are more parallel there. I do kind of like the idea of Zach Wheeler playing the part of Anthony Davis in this trade. As you said, I mean, it's hard to kind of do a direct comp because of the money thing, and that's another aspect of it, is the Padres dumping salary. It's not exactly a one-to-one just because of the fact that the motivations that go into trading in baseball are so different. But I think Fernando Tatis also is, like, the fact that he has some black marks against him, where, like, Luka, they're just concerned about whether or not he's in shape, which he still performs to that level, whereas, like, it's, I don't know, Tatis has, like, some actual off-the-field stuff that isn't related to health, I guess. Like, I don't know if there's been, like, a baseball player that they actually are concerned about whether or not they're in shape or not to play. Like, has there ever been a player who's too fat?
Like, it's Alec Manoah. Like,
Yeah, I guess it is more Alec Manoa. Again, the Blue Jays, like, God, they have a real issue up there.
You can be fat and thrive in Major League Baseball.
Especially as a pitcher. David Ortiz is in the Hall of Fame. He was thin.
Exactly. Like, yeah, exactly. That's a great example.
There's no player where it's like, I mean, yeah, Manoa, I guess, but he also, maybe there's some other stuff going on with him. But like, I don't know. It's rare that in baseball, like, if somebody in Cleveland was always saying about how, like, Jose Ramirez could be so much better if he just, like, slimmed down a little bit. Like, that dude is an amazing athlete. I have no doubt that he's in incredible shape in general. But, like, he, like, looks a little chunky, but that's not even a conversation because it's baseball. So it's like, you know what I mean? It's not in that conversation, which is... I don't know. Basketball is weird.
Like, honestly,
he's still putting up these numbers. Why is it such a concern? I don't understand it.
None of these guys that we're talking about, none of these 25-year-old superstars, I think have an equivalent track record to Luka of being able to be on the field or on the court, be able to place top 10 in like MVP
voting.
Is it
Juan Soto?
It might be. It might be Juan Soto.
I think it is Juan Soto.
It might be like if they traded Juan Soto for Garrett Cole, honestly.
But you see what happens when Juan Soto's on the table. It's weeks of, you know, first of all, you see it coming. Second of all, there's so many rumors and whispers about what's going to happen when he's, you know, on the trade block now. Thing like last year or the deadline when he actually went to San Diego. There's so much chatter before it happens. It doesn't drop in the middle of the night out of the blue. Just goes to show you again.
Yeah.
Times.
I do think if you want to compare it to a trade that's actually happened, aside from the Red Sox trading Mookie Betts to the Dodgers, that
again,
Juan Soto...
they didn't get anything in return.
No, I know. But that Juan Soto trade is probably as close as you get because I think it's the best example I can think of a baseball player being traded at that age who under no circumstances should have ever been available on the trade market.
Right.
Soto rejected the $400 million extension from the Washington Nationals, which led to that trade happening. And honestly, like, as big of a sin as that was to even consider trading him, at this point in time, I think it looks as close as you could probably get to a team doing well despite that.
They are going to be looked at, like, in the future as having done the right thing.
I think so. I think. Because
they weren't going to give him $750 million.
No.
And they ended up with James Wood. So
yeah, I mean, they traded Juan Soto and Josh Bell to the San Diego Padres for James Wood, CJ Abrams, Mackenzie Gore, Harleen Susana, Robert Hassel, and Luke Voit. Notably, and Luke Voit.
He's a real Kyle Higashioka in the Juan Soto. He comes from a long line of Kyle Higashioka-type beats in Juan Soto trades.
Like, James Wood going to be an absolute superstar. I expect him to make that leap this year. He's going to do it in 2025. CJ
Abrams gets out of the
complete
casinos, he'll be
star.
Great.
Yeah, if he gets out of the casino and doesn't get sent to the minor leagues again, he's a star. He's
to low A.
God damn. He's clearly their shortstop of the future for many years to come. Mackenzie Gore has been up and down a lot through his career, but he has turned into a very solid rotation piece. Yeah, he's really good. He had great peripherals last year. I mean, he's not an ace, but Mackenzie Gore is in a very appealing 2-3 in a rotation.
So he's 26. As far as starters go, he's just coming up now. Like, this is like when he should be figuring it out.
He could be entering his prime right now.
In his third year. It's not bad by any means. Like, he'll figure it out.
Susana is still very, very young and has a ton of upside. I think he could become one of baseball's top pitching prospects this year. And Robert Hassel shit the bed completely. But still, I mean, that is a great return once you know that you're not going to retain Juan Soto. And Soto himself obviously made the right move by rejecting $400 million because he got twice that from the Mets.
Literally twice.
That basically worked out for everyone except the Padres.
It's true. My God. It even worked out for the Yankees, arguably. I mean,
they got to the World Series.
They got to the World Series, which is what they wanted. And, I mean, if they want Mike King back, they could probably go get him.
Yeah.
I mean,
they might be able to
re-sign
him. I don't
think they're going to miss Randy Vasquez or Johnny Brito that much. So,
no, yeah. I don't care about those guys.
Yeah.
Like, I think it worked for everyone but the Padres, frankly.
Pretty much, which is so sad. They had to try the hardest and end up getting burned.
I think that is about it for me on trying to compare this trade to a hypothetical baseball deal or try to put it in MLB terms. Before we tap out of here, there are a few free agent moves we want to discuss this week, briefly touch on. Pete Alonso finally makes his decision for the second offseason in a row. Scott Boris makes his clients hold out and ends up costing them a bunch of money. Alonso does get his deal. He does get a bunch of cash for the next 2 years. Signs back with the New York Mets on a 2-year, $54 million deal. We've talked a lot about, you know, how the Mets project for next year. We've been very vocal about
bats.
The fact
they
that they have
bats.
A lot of holes in that lineup and that
rotation.
They
still need pitching.
This, I think, does go a long way towards making them have a very scary lineup. They still
you
need
actually
a shit
now
ton
have
of
protection
pitching
in the lineup for so real protection in the lineup for Soto. So, and also, I mean, Pete now is going to still be. I guess you'd like to think that he'll still be motivated because it's only 2 years to try to then have a good year this year, next year, and try to go get more money at age 33. Good luck, Pete. I think you can't be upset with the Mets. If you're a Mets fan, I know you wanted Pete back. It's a hefty deal for a first baseman, but I mean, he was never going anywhere else and the Mets need him, so it makes sense.
Projects the top of the Mets lineup to look like Francisco Lindor, Juan Soto, Mark Vientos, Pete Alonso, and Brandon Nimmo, which that's terrifying. That is an incredible through five of that lineup.
Yep, it's a good 1-5. They're still, I think, a little top heavy.
Yo, definitely. Then. I am less concerned with Jesse Winker, Francisco Alvarez, Jeff McNeil, and Jose Siri. Like, I think
Alvarez is a good hitter. There will be a time when you're going to talk about him and as far as like hitting catchers goes, and his name will come up among the best, but I don't think we're there yet. So
it requires Francisco Alvarez to have a breakout season, I think, for the bottom half of that lineup to not be a huge problem.
Right. And I do think that's on the table.
Oh, it absolutely
is. Maybe not this
year,
but
I think it's on the table for this year.
I don't know.
It's just not a sure thing.
We'll see. Because he literally completely forgot how to hit for like a month and a half last year. You know, it is possible. But don't forget, he's still young. I think last year did he make his debut last year? Or did he come up a little bit the year before? Either way.
Alvarez debuted the year before.
So this is, you know, that was still his first full year. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. I do think this helps the Mets a lot. I sort of expected this to happen. I think it's the best fit for both the team and for the player. I do think Pete is probably going to be kind of upset at Scott Boris, might end up looking for a new agent like Jordan Montgomery did this past year. We'll see.
50-50 shot with Boris. You end up either pissed with him or he makes you $800 million.
Next up, Jack Flaherty to the Detroit Tigers. Also a 2-year contract, $35 million. I love it as well. It gives major Gleyber Torres for Aroldis Chapman vibes. This team traded a player away for a few months. That player goes and wins a World Series and then signs back with the team that traded him. I was a little bit iffy on the return that the Tigers got at the time for Jack Flaherty. They got Teron Lorenzo, a catching prospect, and Trey Sweeney. I think they could have done a little bit better given the team that they were trading with and how badly the Dodgers needed Jack Flaherty, even if he did have a couple terrible starts in the postseason. He still got that ring. I think they could have gotten a little bit more last July, but I mean, this is looking like sort of the definition of a win-win trade where the Tigers get their guy back. They badly needed a pitcher. I mean, behind Tarek Skubal, you know, they've got Reese Olson. Casey Mize is not super good. Jackson Jobe should have a big season, but
I love Reese Olson, dude.
Me too. I like Reese Olson.
He's going to jump next year. I think his name is going to be popping.
Yeah, but they definitely needed a two. They got their two, so good fit for Jack Flaherty, good fit for the Tigers. I'm a little surprised that he didn't make more money, like, you say Kikuchi getting a bigger contract than Jack Flaherty at his age.
I say Kikuchi.
That's a little strange.
No, I mean, what was the number that he came in on?
2 for $35 million.
Yeah, that seems a little low. But I mean, the pitching market has been weird recently. And we've talked about this in previewing the offseason. The pitching market itself had like a ton of depth this year. If you want starting pitchers, there are still guys that have not signed that you could probably get for not much that would be slotting in pretty high for some of these thinner rotations. So, I mean, like Andrew Heaney, Nick Pivetta, I don't think anybody wants Patrick Corbin. You could go get Lance Lynn.
These names aren't moving the needle for me.
No, none of them are moving the needle, but these are all guys who... Clayton Kershaw still hasn't signed his $20 million with the Dodgers yet, so if he doesn't do that, is he done?
Maybe.
Are we at the end of the Kershaw era? Either way, those are just... I mean, Andrew Heaney's had decent seasons in other places. It's just like they're, you know, these guys are now on the verge of, like, being out of the league. Like, somebody's going to sign them. John Means, Cal Quantrill. It's like these are... They're not great starters, but they're absolutely, like, four or five guys. Like, maybe if you're terrible, they could be a three. I'm not shocked that Jack Flaherty didn't get much. It's late, too. Like, I feel like if you're a starting pitcher, you're going to get a good deal in December at the latest. Like, this far in, nobody wants you. You're not going to get a giant contract. But I don't know. It's less than Stroman got from the Yankees, so I guess that kind of hurts.
That's very true. Speaking of pitcher contracts, last one we've got to discuss this week. Scherzer finally gets signed. Yeah, signs with the Toronto Blue Jays.
The border.
Very funny contract, I think. He signed 1 year for $15.5 million. Yep. That half is pretty funny because he just barely beats the market value for Justin Verlander and Charlie Morton, who got 1 year for 15. A little bit petty on Mad Max's part. I always love to see that. I think that's hilarious. And the Blue Jays needed a starter because I think they have a very uninspiring rotation. Like, their guys are old. Their metrics under the hood have been declining year after year. I think they're going to need to.
They have this guy in the Dominican Winter League named Alek Manoah who's coming, so you better watch out.
Terrified.
Little known prospect.
We've thrown so many strays at Alek Manoah this week. I love it.
Does he not deserve them?
Oh, he does. He'll probably eat them.
But right now, their rotation is Gausman, Berríos, Bassett, Scherzer, Francis, Bowden, Francis. Like, it is...
the unction.
You know, Gausman's really good. Berríos is serviceable. Bassett's decent. So, you know, Scherzer slotting in at your four at 41 years old is funny. The Blue Jays need a lot more than that. And they're also just, like, aging rapidly. And also, they're too young at the same time. So, like, I don't know what their plan is and if they still think they have any chance of competing this year. They need more than this, so.
Oh, yeah. I do expect that the Blue Jays are going to have to call up some young guys to try to inject some life into the rotation this year.
Is Tiedemann's year finally here?
If he's healthy, it might be. I think their pick of Trey Yesavage is going to end up pretty big for them. I expect him to be a guy that doesn't spend too long in the minor leagues. Like, he was very, very dominant for a lot of the College World Series last year and a lot of the games leading up to that. Very promising start against Wake Forest. So I think maybe you see Trey Yesavage pretty quickly. We'll see how the Toronto Blue Jays rotation plays out. It seems like there is a pretty firm ceiling on it with a floor that has the chance to completely bottom out. That's going to do it for us this week. If you haven't heard already about the Mudville Patreon, you can access it at patreon.com/Mudville. You receive free updates anytime we put out new content, whether that be an episode of the main feed or an episode of Mudville at the movies. Like, we put out two of those last week. We did a two-part for our top 10 movies of 2024. Tony Brown and I last Tuesday and Friday. We had a lot of fun doing that. So if you haven't checked that out already, go do it. And you also get access to our lists. I put out my top 56 for fantasy baseball first year player drafts last week as well. Ton of content went up last week at patreon.com/Mudville. Any support you can give us is greatly appreciated. If you can't do that, we would also love if you just give us a 5-star rating and review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever it is you happen to be listening. That is going to do it for us this week. I had a great time discussing this insane Luka Doncic trade. I don't think we will ever see a trade like it again. So much to discuss. I'm sure we'll be coming back to it for years to come. But for now, I think we did it justice. This has been Mudville. I have been one of your hosts, Nolan Rabine.
I've been Brody Staub.
We will see you next week.